Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James. We've got an hour and a half to spend together. I hope you'll join me. 888-876-5593. Well, who needs the tabloids when you've got the Alex Murdaugh trial underway? Yes, not much to say about it yesterday, but today the witnesses kept on a-coming. Six of them so far. There were six today, and during the sixth testimony, they rested for the day. All right, so you know the story, and it's one that certainly has everyone in South Carolina interested, I do believe. The Murdaugh family was pretty much the ruling elite when it came to judges and prosecutors in the Lowland County where the family has resided for generations, grandfather, father, all that kind of stuff, prosecutors. In fact, they had to take the picture of Alex Murdaugh's grandfather out of the courtroom for the trial. And so, yeah, that's how well-known and, for the most part, well-liked was this family over the decades. But when you have generation after generation, of course, the stories start to build, and then they culminated with the news that everybody's heard that supposedly Alex Murdaugh murdered his wife and his younger son. And it's interesting, since that announcement, there's been 100 charges against Alex Murdaugh, everything from drug dealing to stealing clients' money and in between. Now, the surviving son, Butch, is not without his own history as well. But meantime, it's interesting to see that nothing has yet come out that would say, here's the smoking gun, no pun intended. Butch is in the trial every day, and as I say, he's kind of an interesting wild card, because the theory that Alex Murdaugh had, that he actually said when he discovered his wife and son dead, he pretty much immediately blamed Mallory Beach's family. Mallory Beach was the 19-year-old girl who was killed in a boating accident with Murdaugh's son steering the boat. And at the time, it was alleged that Murdaugh was trying to change the story to protect his son. Paul is the younger son. And there were a lot of murky questions about that. And now, of course, with the death of Paul came the dropping of the charges. And he was going to be tried for some form of involuntary homicide. And there were also questions as to where he got the alcohol. He was presumably drunk. In fact, I think that was proven. But he had used Butch's ID, his older brother. Butch, however, not without his own history, as I say, for one thing, and probably the most titillating, if you will, it was the death of Stephen Smith. Now, Stephen Smith was a 19-year-old boy, man, who was found in the road in 2015, and it was thought that it was a hit and run, but a lot closer, it seemed like, no, that's not what's going on here. The family had been trying to get law enforcement to look further into this for years. Now, what's really sad in this, and law enforcement, by the way, declined to go further with it, but what's really sad about this is Stephen Smith's mother got a call from South Carolina State Law Enforcement Division, SLED, and she was so hopeful at first because she thought, oh, good, they're going to open the case again. And no, they called to say they were looking into Stephen's case because they have to see if his mother's family is involved in the shooting of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh. And at the time, she said, what a slap in the face. Yeah, no kidding. But the theory, how Butch played into this, was that Butch and he were lovers. And, of course, there's no conclusive proof about that, but that's been going on for a while. So that's a subtext. So you have Paul, the murdered son, who was about to stand trial for the death of 19-year-old Mallory Beach. And you have Butch, the older son, who is implicated in a death of murky circumstances. But that wasn't the only murkiness surrounding Butch. Butch was kicked out of law school. Like everybody else in the family, he went to law school, don't they all? And so it was that in his second semester, in I think it was 2019, he gets kicked out. And he gets kicked out for plagiarism. Now, you usually don't get back in when that happens, but apparently last year, in addition to all the pleadings you'd expect and $60,000 changing hand and more, he supposedly has been let back into law school. I don't know that he's actually attending it. In the meantime, he'd been working at his family's law firm, and he's living with a former classmate from law school who actually became a lawyer, and she's been with him at the trial. It's interesting to see some of the people who are the witnesses in this, who are sitting in the trial looking at this, are realizing that Butch is going to be called as a witness, but for or against. Now, meanwhile, they're saying that as they look at Butch, he was the only one smiling in the courtroom, which was sort of an eerie feeling for a number of people. But so that's where we are at the moment. We have, no smoking gun, figuratively or literally, and the trial continues. And you've got a lot of people interested, including a couple of people who were interviewed who like traveled for hours. They're court watchers. They've got notebooks and filings and pictures with circles and descriptions and all the things you'd expect. Yes, and a paragraph on the back to quote Alice's Restaurant. And they've been going through this every day since the murders were in fact announced. And what's interesting about that is the two of them sort of disagree on how this is going to turn out. One says, oh, he'll get off, no two ways about it, and the other one's not so sure. As far as whether he did it or not, well, it's anyone's guess. But when you have a family that is that powerful, you know there's a lot of people who are going to take delight in seeing them go down. There's a number of people close to the family who say, this is plausible, and there's others who are saying, no way. So that's where we are at the moment on that. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, if you've been watching this and have some opinions, I'd love to hear it. We haven't heard from Detective Chuck in a while, and I've mailed him his prizes along with everybody else's, and we're going to mail him yet another prize because one of his prizes, we were giving him one of our calendars that he really wanted, and the problem is that by the time we mailed it was the next year. So we'll make up for that, I promise. But in the meantime, we'll have Mark in Downers Grove, and there's going to be room for you too, but he's back. And now, the moment you've been waiting for. It's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. And of course, that's Antonio Carlos Jobim. And that's my favorite album by him. And I've probably got 36 Antonio Carlos Jobim albums, but that's the one. And interestingly, it was on A&M in 1967, Wave. And just some great things on that album. Just love it. Well, anyway, I'm playing it because Antonio Carlos Jobim would have turned 96 yesterday. Died in New York. He was there for heart surgery. And, well, it's been a while now. I don't remember the year. But in the 90s, he was 67 at the time, born in 1927. So, yeah, rest in peace, Antonio Carlos Jobim. Right. So many good things. But, yeah, that A&M album was just terrific. And, I've got him on a number of albums from a number of locations. But for whatever reason, I thought that 67 album was just the best. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Mark is in Downers Grove. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
Well, if all goes as planned, I should be moving into my new place this coming Wednesday.
Yay! All right, so
I had a very pleasant conversation with one of the staff today. We talked about how we both have young faces. She's in her 50s and says people say she looks much younger, and I'm in my mid-60s, but I can still pass for mid to late 40s.
All right.
She knows what I look like. She says, yes, you do have a young face. But I was calling because last night somebody mentioned the old WJJD. And
now WYLL. Preaching and teaching.
My understanding of what happened to that station is incomplete. But they did send me coverage maps. And what happened was that after they became WYLL, they were still lower power at night, and people out here in the far west suburbs complained that they weren't able to hear their favorite Christian programming, and so
wouldn't have mattered. The rules changed. They got their 50,000 watt nighttime coverage in 2005.
They did. They had a transmitter in Des Plaines, and now they have an additional one in Romeoville that they switched to at night.
Well, it's a six-tower array.
It is beamed up. It's beamed
north and
up
south.
North.
North and south, yeah.
According to the maps that they gave me. But I have picked it up out in the eastern United States at night.
Sure.
And it's patterned so that it does protect KSL out in Salt Lake City, and it's kind of faint out here, out in Aurora at night. It's still not the strongest that you might wish for, but it does make it out there, whereas it did before. And so they've got their 50,000 watts both day and night, and If you live in Romeoville at night, it's going to blast your selectivity out the window on your radio. But that's basically what. And I don't know what the YLL call letters stand for. Do you?
Do they stand for anything? I mean, they're brokered religion. You know, that's what it's a dollar a holler radio.
It could mean you love the Lord. I don't know, but their slogan is hope for your life.
Yeah, no, I'm aware. The situation with that is when Salem picked it up, the rules were changing, and they had been for quite some time, on protection. And so, therefore, they saw, as long as they engineered that north and south, and it does go south just as well as north. I mean, it will cover Milwaukee, for instance, pretty darn well. But that's a six-tower array in Romeoville.
Yeah.
So the reason when you say, well, it's getting out there, the reason it's getting out there is because, of course, 1160 was a clear channel frequency, and so you don't have a lot at night that's licensed to it, so you don't have a lot of interference, and certainly not anything else with any real power. So you're dealing really with KSL, and there's a very directional, but one in Lakewood, New Jersey, but for the most part, it's fairly fairly vacant there. So
the southern coverage is going to take it down to Louisiana at night.
Well, what's important, you got to understand why they care about this, and it's not the people who are in a western suburb complaining, trust me. When you're selling brokered religion, the preachers buy it based on your coverage map. They want to know how many people they can reach. And so previously, they couldn't sell anything at night. Well, now they can get some, you know, won't say deluxe bucks, but some pretty darn good money for that nighttime coverage. So that's what precipitated it. But like I say, it was an engineering feat to some extent requiring 6 towers.
Yeah, now that was new information to me. I didn't know it was 6 towers. Right. So they don't really... But they do get out there some west and east because
Of course they do.
And I picked them up out in the eastern United States.
No, again, you know, at night with the ionosphere layer, if there's nothing else on the dial, of course you're going to do all sorts of things. But even looking at it, they're going to, you know, cover way through Michigan City. Where they're going to be pulling in is like Aurora. They're pulling in that direction because they've got to, and you know, they're pulling in for Rockford. Because again, 1160 in Salt Lake City is going to be the primary concern there.
And so. I have a question for any listener who wants to answer it. I have been having trouble lately picking up stations from out east, like the Canadian Zoomer at night and the CJBC. And I used to think maybe it was the architecture of this hotel that I've been staying in, but the daytime DXing remains real good. So I'm wondering if anybody else has noticed weak ionospheric propagation lately coming out from the east.
Mm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I've got a little guide here in a moment where people report what their DXing habits are. So I'll take a look at it in a minute. But the interesting thing is, in 6 days, you're going to have a better idea because you're going to be in a new location. And you're going to see what you get.
Yes, exactly. I'm one of the few geeks who looks forward to finding out about.
I got to go. Hang on a minute. I got to go. We are. Or maybe we've already gone.
Or maybe you're home.
Yes, we've already gone. Yeah. Talk to you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Ray Stevens. Yeah, and a fine song. A real woulda, coulda, shoulda on Monument came out in 1968 and promptly did just about nothing. Although Mr. Businessman that followed it did pretty darn well. Ray turned 84 this week on Tuesday, so happy, happy birthday. And yes, he's absolutely still with us. 888-876-5593. We're going to be getting to Jeff and Bradley, but we got Johnny in Austin, and I'm so glad to see him here because, Johnny, I got to tell you, I just found not one but two emails from you, and I don't know how I missed them, but by all means, have Gary send me that stuff.
Yeah, well, I got one taken care of today, but we'll talk about that later. That's one reason my voice is kind of crackly, because they had a tube up there, and, you know, that messes with your voice for a couple of days.
But, doesn't it? Yeah, well, definitely. Call me when I'm off the air. I want to hear it.
All right. Yeah, it's so far so good.
Good. Excellent.
Got got another procedure to go, but we'll see it. Well, you know, anyway.
And that's tomorrow morning, right?
No.
Okay.
No. What I had was actually in my email I did it wrong. It was today. It was Thursday.
Oh.
Today.
All right. Well, I can't wait for this call. So by all means.
So should I call you when you get off?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to try to stay away.
Well, it's only, 48 minutes.
Yeah, well, I know when you come on after the games, the audience kind of scatters. So,
so do I.
I thought it'd be a good time to call you. But
yeah.
I want to talk about music a little bit. You there's a couple of thoughts here. You talked about... oh, my goodness. Who were you talking about the other night? Well, maybe. Yeah. Tony Clark.
Oh, yeah. That was that murder
that
was really a soap opera.
Favorites.
Yeah.
And, but I thought about another song, This Heart of Mine. It's totally different. I think we talked about it some years ago by a group called The Artistics.
Oh, of course.
OK label.
Of course.
Somebody really missed a gold mine on that record.
I agree.
And I heard it by accident. I was listening to some British Northern Soul station on my internet radio the other day, and I heard a version of This Heart of Mine, and it was not good. And I got Gary to Shazam it, and it was by Jimmy James and the Vagabonds.
Oh, all right. Because I was going to say, I know the Artistics, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, we'll hear a little of it. So continue.
Oh yeah. So anyway, I heard this. What I thought was a really poor version of it might have been the original. No, I don't think so. Well, anyway, it was Jimmy James and the Vagabonds, who I wasn't a fan of anyway.
Right, Come to Me Softly. Yeah.
Oh no, that was not my cup of tea.
We won't be playing it.
But also, I got to thinking, you know, about some artists, and have you ever talked about Joe Hinton? Besides his, his claim to fame was the Willie Nelson written song.
Yeah, funny, of course.
But he did so much more than that.
Yes, he did.
And I fortunately have some singles, and I was looking up here on some of the. They got one CD of him on Shout, and they missed a ton of great stuff. They've got some good ones on here, but it's funny, when I first got into radio in 65, I didn't realize, you know, when I was at KYOK, that some of these songs that came out were new artists doing old songs, and my dad had to drive me to work, and he said, you know, that song that you like so much by Aretha Franklin called Skylark, that's not a new song.
Right.
And then he said, You want to know another one that you're playing that's not a new song? I said, what's that? And he said, Joe Hinton's Just a Kid Named Joe. He
right.
said, that was done years ago.
Right.
But Joe Hinton was, he did a heck of a lot of greater songs than that one.
Oh, absolutely. He did a ton of things. But, you know, in beach music country, it's really interesting because, of course, everybody knows Kidnapper by Jewel and the Rubies, but it's actually a rip of a Joe Hinton song. And I'm going to see. Yeah. You know
well, yeah,
it. You know it ain't right.
Him.
What?
Oh, I said I never met him, but I saw him. Mm-hmm. Right before he passed away at a wrestling match in Houston. I was with my dad, or it was some event, and I got a glimpse of him, although I didn't introduce myself or anything. But this man died at like 38, I think.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Now, the kidnapper deal, have you ever heard kidnapper?
No.
Okay, so you got to hear both of these, and this is one of those where you say to yourself, how on earth could nobody have been complaining about this? So this was Jewel in the Rubies, and Jewel was actually a professor of, I think it was like at LSU, one of the Louisiana colleges, and this became a very big beach music record. So we're going to leave that right there, and that'll be fresh in your mind. And now just go back a year or two earlier to good old Joe Hinton. Now, how the hell wasn't he complaining about this? Here's Joe. The same record but different lyrics.
Yeah, no doubt. And I've got that one somewhere with my singles. But, you know, when he was working for Don Roby, for Don Roby, they didn't even really do him justice by putting out I don't think they put out but one album of him.
Right. They didn't do much at all. He started out as a gospel singer, actually. And it was Don Roby who wanted him to do the secular stuff. But he did a lot of wonderful stuff. And yes, talk about somebody who was tremendously underrated. And yeah, he died in 68. So he was a young guy because he was born in 29. So you can do the math on that. He was just basically a kid almost. So yeah. I agree with you. I thought Joe Hinton was tremendous.
If you ever have a chance, you might throw in just A Kid Named Joe or A Thousand Cups of Happiness was beautiful. But all I got in memory of him are some old 45s, and sometimes you got to go to work and take the pops and clicks out of them.
Oh, yeah, one at a time. But it's worth it. And, you know, after he left Peacock, for a while he was on RV, and he had a couple things there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Let's Start a Romance and My Love is Real. They're both out in 61.
It said he died of skin cancer in 1960. I'd forgotten he died so young.
Yeah, he died young. Absolutely.
In Boston, but...
Yeah, and it was...
He got a lot of play in Houston.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and, you know, thanks to Don Roby, of course, he would have. But, yeah, when I read he had died of skin cancer, I thought it probably was melanoma. And because that can happen so quickly. And so, yeah.
You know, I never met Don Roby, but I interviewed him on the phone one day. I talked to him a long time one Saturday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
He was quite a character. He was always very good to me, but
I
kept him on my good side.
Right. I love the phrase they said about him. Don Roby is half black, half Jewish, and all gangster.
Well, you know, there was a real sweet lady that worked for him for years named Evelyn Johnson.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to her a lot on the phone, and actually I went out over there and saw the office, the business office.
Yeah.
Back when I was at KYOK, and hell, they'd give me everything I wanted. Plus, my theme song on the station was by James Booker. That's when we had theme songs called Big Nick.
All right. All right.
Remember that one?
Absolutely. I think my favorite by him is Gonzo.
Oh, I know. You said so the other night.
Yeah. Love that Gonzo. But yes, absolutely, I do. And yeah, Evelyn Johnson not only was manager for the labels, but she was head of the Buffalo Booking Agency. So she was in charge of getting all those acts the gigs.
You know, I think she lived for a good long time. She's not with us anymore, I'm sure, but she was always very nice to me. But when like I said, I went there and I saw a recording studio, but I heard stories over the years when that place closed down. I guess that's when MCA bought them out. I somehow got that in my head, but I've been hearing stories over the years that building sat there full of pictures and all kind of stuff for years, and people would go in there and go and do drugs. I mean, this was after it closed down.
Oh, I'll bet,
and it sat there with all this memorabilia in it, and people, you know, some legitimate folks went in there and rescued a bunch of that stuff.
Yeah, well, Evelyn died in 2005, and she was 80.
Oh, well, it doesn't seem like that long ago.
No, but it was long enough for sure. And she was in many ways, really the brains. And in fact, when Don Roby really kind of put her in charge, she went out and took accounting courses and bookkeeping courses to learn what she needed to know. And she was absolutely the business sense behind that. She was never married. She had no kids. This was her life.
Yep, she lived on a street called Oakdale in Houston.
Okay.
I'm sure maybe I met her that one time I went there, but heck, I was so young at that time, I bothered people on the telephone like I'm bothering you. Right
now. No, you're not bothering me at all. You're not bothering me. Absolutely not. So.
By the way, I heard some I spent an afternoon listening to the radio station in Globe, Arizona, the AM KJAA, the other day, and it was quite impressive.
Well, it isn't to me. You know, I put about 3,800 of my favorites years ago, and I just haven't had time to update it or also to take out some of the CD versions, which every time I hear it, John, you know, hears me squealing like a stuck pig, you know, because I was lazy. You're talking about taking pops and clicks out. Well, you know, and some of those 45s, I would literally take out 300 pops and clicks. So occasionally.
I've been down the road. It's like going to school.
It is. And, you know, once you start, you're like addicted. You have to get them all and all that. And so every now and then I say, oh, just throw on a few CD versions. Who will know? Well, I'll know. And it drives me crazy.
For the listeners that don't know what we're talking about now, in the old days when you'd record something on a tape and you wanted to cut out a pop or noise or a click and that kind of stuff, you'd have to take a razor blade and all this stuff and splicing tape and do it and come up with a little better recording if you were lucky. But now with the digital programs, you can actually go on your computer and see where these defects are. In a lot of cases, you'll surprise yourself about what you can fix.
Well, yes, but sometimes you won't see them, and those are the ones where you might spend 2 hours with it. You'll hear it, you will not see it. You will take that out, you know, basically to infinity, and you still are not seeing it. You know, so those are the ones. John's unfortunately had to put up with me like for 2 hours on one click, and it's like, you can't see it on the waveform, but I hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of, you were talking about, to Fran the other night about Brenda Holloway.
Oh, yes.
Which brought me to Kim Weston.
Uh-huh.
And back in 1997, I was driving around listening to some station that they were bartering in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this Kim Weston song that I'd never heard in my life. I had it on a CD, and it was really good, called Looking for the Right Guy.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. You'd never heard that?
Not until 1997, I hadn't.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, that was really a good piece of music.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was one of her more well-known things, but I could be wrong.
It was never a single that I know of.
It didn't have to be.
Maybe it was.
I'm pretty sure it might have been, but it didn't have to be. It was just a record that was played over and over on a lot of the weird oldie shows. Jerry Blavitt.
Well, I wish I would have known it.
Yeah, Jerry Blavitt used to play it, and so did the other guy. Why can't I think of his name? The guy who was on Wi-Fi. His real name was Ron Cutler. Ron Diamond, the Diamond Mine. He played it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I've never been a real album listener before. I never was. I was a hit guy. I wanted to hear the hit. And sometimes I'd flip them up. I mean, one of the greatest flip sides of all time was, in my opinion, the Barbara Lewis, Thank a Little Sugar.
Oh, yeah, the flip of Hello Stranger, right. Looking for the Right Guy was released on Tamla in 64 as a 45.
It was?
I think so. Yeah.
Didn't know it.
Yeah. And now the question is, because I'm looking at the label copy right now, but I'm wondering about that. I'm pretty sure, because, you know, sometimes they'll redo them. But no, August 2nd, 1964, it was released, and the flip side was Feel All Right Tonight.
Neither one of them did anything.
No. No, although I should look to see if looking for the Right Guy might have charted. I don't know, but it, yeah, 64. It was absolutely released. Unlike some of the Motown stuff that just you wonder, like that.
They put out a lot of junk too.
Well, yeah. Well, when you put out that much product, it's gonna be a mix. But I was always curious why they didn't put out things. You know, like that record.
Didn't they even put Bobby Darin on there once?
I think so. But let's see, Kim Weston. I'm looking for 1964.
I'm trying to move around, and I'm not real mobile right now.
Yeah. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are.
Oh.
And we'll, or don't try to move around, and we'll be back in moments right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yes, that's Kim Weston, and it is 1964, and it was released in August. And then they released a duet with her and Marvin Gaye in October, but nothing ever happened with this one. Talking to Johnny Gowan in Austin, and we're back at you, Johnny. Are you in a more comfortable position now?
Yeah, and I got a throat lozenge that isn't doing me any harm. It's got honey in the middle of it.
All right.
So I'm cranked up and ready to go. I appreciate you playing that, by the way.
Sure.
There's just so many, you know, you play songs sometimes that when I was at KYOK in 65, we never actually even played that record. I mean, some stuff that you played that was really good material at that time, and we never played it. Which reminds me of that air check that you have possible access to about the Duke of Earl,
yes,
guy who hired me there. Yeah.
Yes. You might not have heard it because very often the distribution was so lousy on some of this stuff that the station might not have even gotten it.
But when I was there in 65, it was funny because later on down the road and by the early 70s, they had record reps that would come around.
Sure.
And they had a few back in those early days, I'm sure they did, but usually these records would come in and they would end up in the production room in the envelopes, and the jocks would just open them up. Now, we had a survey of the hits,
yeah,
and who knows went on with that deal.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. So that wasn't the most reliable. If you ever saw that that video clip of me in the Texas Radio Hall of Fame,
oh yes,
it gives us a quick screenshot of the KYOK survey, and you're like, "What the heck is this?"
Exactly.
So, and you'll find every Duke Peacock record on there. I'll tell you that.
Well, sure, but I mean, that was just down the road. That's what I mean. So if the label didn't have distribution in Houston, maybe it got mailed to the station. In some cases, maybe it didn't even arrive.
Yeah, but a lot of times we just, the jocks just go through and open that stuff, and that's where I found the artistics is hard of mine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that absolutely. Between that and when they started to bring in carts, you would have sometimes slug rotations where, you know, I don't know if any stations you worked at had it, but, you know, you'd be basically pulling the records from the front, putting them in the back, and if there was one on a cart, instead of the record in the stack, it would be a slug, and it would tell you what cart number it was.
Yeah, I went through that in Top 40 radio.
Right. Well, I made it a habit of pulling off the tape and hearing what they were using for the slugs. And that's how I found This Love by the Joy Tones and Love Potion. It's like, whoa, this is a great record. This shouldn't be a slug. But there it was. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
I tell you, we pulled off some funny stuff back then.
Yes. Yes. Well, there you have it. And call me later. I will. Now, see, you only have to stay up another 20 minutes.
That's not a problem.
All right.
The 40-40?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Gotcha.
Good deal.
Okay.
So, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, love talking to Johnny, but I want to get to everybody else, too. We got Jeff and Brian and Mike and Frank and Jeff and Bradley. What's up tonight?
Good morning, Miss Raleigh. How are you?
All right. How about yourself?
I was helping out a friend who's under the weather. Now I'm under the weather.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay. You're keeping me company, and I thank you. I never heard of a slug before.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've been interested in radio all my life, and I've never heard of it.
Well, here's what happened. When stations were first moving toward carts, before they were... This is the 60s. Before they were all cart, when they were still playing a lot of vinyl, if they had a record that was on cart, the only way you would know when to play that is if it came up in rotation. And since it wasn't a 45, remember, you're picking the record from the front of the box and putting it to the back of the box. Well, here comes the one for the cart. They're not going to shove the cart in the box, so they put a slug record in there, a rotation slug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would say play cart number 32 or whatever.
Isn't that what you had a schedule for?
Well, you didn't have them. It was pull from the front, put to the back. You weren't looking at a playlist.
Okay.
That was later.
Oh, that was before the computer came in.
Oh, not only before the computer came in, nobody was even going to type it up. It wasn't like that. It was just pull from the front, put it in the back.
Okay, I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Well, I learned something new tonight. I'm very interested about that. Thanks to your listener who was bringing up the WYLL signal, I will never forgive them. I called them years ago, and I said, do you have anything left from WJJD? And they said, well, yes, we do. We've got tons of stuff. We've got a treasure trove of stuff at the transmitter. And I said, would you be obliged to take me there so I can, and I'd be willing to pay you for whatever? And they said, sure, we'd be honored to give you a tour of the transmitter. Never happened.
Oh.
It's all gone. It's all gone now.
Oh.
But anyway, that's
a heartbreak. Yeah, it is a heartbreak. And of course, their nighttime pattern is off of Deer Drive off 355, and you can see those six towers.
Correct, yes. Right, so yeah, that's one of those things I'll never get over that. I know,
believe me, I can't tell you how many times.
Oh, I know you've been in that position
before.
Oh,
yes, yes.
Two quick questions. When JJD dropped the adult standards format for the
sports
in favor of the talk radio, before going back to the adult standards, obviously, all of the it doesn't take a scientist to realize that all of the listeners And I listened to WAIT too, because they were playing adult standards. And so so I understand everybody went over there to get that music, but when they switched back to that format, how come the listeners didn't follow?
Well, listeners, you know, it's interesting. Listeners rarely do, as far as that goes. And I've seen this so many times when, say, a big morning man will be at one station and then he'll go to another station thinking that all his listeners are going to follow. The example that always comes to mind was when Dick Purton left CKLW. It is not necessarily the case that the audience will follow you. Never okay. has been. You know, people's habits, you know, have happened to me many times. People who would be listening to me at one place, they wouldn't be listening to me at the next.
So you're saying that loyalty is just, well, it's, I've known loyalty for a long time, it's been gone from pretty much everything in life, but you're telling me that even a long time ago it was gone?
Well, but yes, but remember, when you're going back far enough, the disc jockey was only part of the package. If you like the station and you like the music and you like the promotions and you like the presentation, well, if the jock left, everything else didn't leave with him.
Right.
So.
But I'm saying let's say it was July 28th, 1996. That was the day they switched back to adult standards. After being on talk radio for a year and a half.
Okay. Here's the question. The audience scattered, and in that case, the audience had to scatter because they weren't going to necessarily stay with a completely different format. It's like if they went Spanish language, they wouldn't stay. All right.
Correct, so yeah.
We'll assume that whatever format they're approaching, whatever station we're talking about, doesn't have to be 1160. But, okay, so a radio station changes to a format that is completely different from what it was before. The listeners are going to go somewhere else. Well, once they're somewhere else, if they're happy with it, what's the impetus for them to leave that?
Well, I'm sorry to say that I don't have an answer to your question, but to follow it up with a question. The day they switched back on July 28th, 1996, that was a gorgeous, I remember the day, beautiful, gorgeous summer day. And for me, you know, I would assume that I'm like most Americans, I tune around a lot on the radio. And if I happen to hear that music, which I love, playing on that station again, I'm going to be excited and start telling people and all of that. You mean to tell me that nobody switches around and says, hey, the music's back on 1160?
Well, not the majority of people, but you're bringing up a priceless example, because when JJD, which of course dropped adult standards for talk in 94, came back to it in 96, they still had G. Gordon Liddy and Tom Likas. So depending upon what time you tuned in, you weren't getting your adult standards.
Right. But you had all day, though.
Well, I understand that. But people, you know, in general, you're going to get some people who will. But in general, once somebody's needs are being met somewhere, it is hard to get them to make a change.
So you're just telling me that an average listener might say, oh, 1160's back on music. And they have Sinatra playing here, or Nat King Cole playing here. Oh, great, great song that are playing. But WAIT still does it for me.
Well, it's not so much that. Remember, you're very interested in radio. For most listeners, radio is a utility. Yeah. It's not that level of interest. So if AIT is playing the same things and they're liking them, well, why do they have to look further for it?
Okay.
You know,
well, it goes back to loyalty again.
Well, but it is a case of loyalty. Again, think of it as a utility.
Okay.
And so I'm
the exception then to the rule that I'm the loyal one.
Well, you're in the minority because you have a deep abiding interest in it. You know, radio is for most people a time-shared activity. They're listening to the radio while they're doing something else. Maybe it's driving, maybe it's washing the dishes, I don't care, while working, whatever it is, nobody is sitting in front of the radio and staring at it like it was 1932. And so
that would be me. That would be me doing that.
There are very few people who will do that. You are absolutely in the minority. So for most people, it's much more of a casual relationship. Now, if if suddenly AIT stopped playing the music that they liked and nothing else was available, they'd be just saying, I'm losing my music. I can't hear it anywhere. If it came back somewhere, well, they'd hear it again. But that didn't happen. They were being fed a diet of what they wanted where they were.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I don't think they think of it in terms of loyalty.
Okay, well, that's very interesting to me. Well, yeah, I had this conversation with my brother who owns a business, and he told me that there's no customer loyalty to businesses anymore. Well, and I said, yeah, I think that's pretty much true in everything.
And I don't know how much there ever was other than your core customer. You know, like the business that your brother has, he's got a core group of customers who are going to be loyal and going to be there, and you know, they'll be his power consumers. But that might be 5% of his total take.
Mm-hmm.
So... no, it's not like that. And the other thing, of course, is at this point in time, so many things are competing for the attention of the listener. Back to that, it's almost an unlimited supply. And if you add online to that, whatever somebody wants to hear, they'll find it.
Right. Well, you've given me an education. So you mean to tell me you've lost a lot of listeners because you've moved around?
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny that occasionally someone will find me. I'll get an email every now and then. Oh, man, when I was in high school, I listened to you every night in Denver, you know, and that was 40 years ago, that kind of thing. And so mm-hmm. occasionally that'll happen. But more often than not, no, it's out of sight, out of mind. And as I say, you can look at some of the examples, and Dick Purton, the most notable, because, again, he was just killing it at CKLW. He goes across the road, and the audience doesn't follow.
This is all new to me. I thought in radio that, you know, your audience followed you if they loved you.
Well, with talk, there is probably more of a proclivity to do that because the host is going to stand out so much more than a guy who's just spinning records. But for the most part, no, it's stationality.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, this is the
fascinating.
State.
Fascinating. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Right.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593, and I think that's probably close to the end of the night, but we're going to try to get Brian and Frank and Mike in under the wire. Otherwise, of course, Monday night trivia. Tomorrow trivia is pre-recorded, so don't call, but Monday night we'll be back live at it. And next week there are no sports interruptions, so there on WGN Radio.
Oh, you got it.
Oh. All right.
My fault.
Well, that's all right. And here I am sitting here just reading, and there's Adam sitting there just reading. And suddenly it's like, wait a minute, talk. I can do that. We got Brian and Joliet. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Brian. No? All right. We've lost Brian and Joliet, I do think. Well, that gives us more time for Mike in Mount Pleasant here. So, Mike, are you there?
Hi, Raleigh. Of course I'm here. I wouldn't desert you.
Hey, I
came across a story, very interesting. It claims that there is a documentary out that says that Brooke Shields was a rape victim when she was younger, and I think it's a publicity stunt. If you read the story, nowhere does she name the attacker or even claim that she went to the police to complain about the guy and have him arrested for rape. Nowhere. So I think she's trying to revive a dragging, sagging, damn near dead career, and I have a request as well.
Okay, what's the request?
It's an incredibly serene, super tranquil instrumental song by Eric Clapton called Peaches and Diesel.
Oh,
it's
God.
Incredibly tranquil.
I don't know. Maybe. Just I'll go with maybe, but don't hold your breath.
Maybe. Okay. Come on, Raleigh, you can do it for me.
Well, all right. We'll talk to you later. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right. So, yeah, that's a definite maybe. All right. So, let's see. We're going to talk to Frank in Gurnee. How's it going tonight, Frank?
Yeah, you never played the Little Green Apples for me.
Well,
so,
I haven't forgotten about you. You're on the list.
Okay. Good. You have anything by Johnny and Joe?
Of course I do. I have a lot by Johnny and Joe. Well, other than Over the Mountain Across the Sea, you want something different, right?
No, that's it. Over the Mountain, you know,
that's
one of my favorite songs.
Well, that was their big hit. But they have you ever heard them do Kingdom of Love?
I think so.
Yeah.
I've heard so many.
That's my favorite, yeah. Kingdom of Love. But in any event, Over the Mountain, Across the Sea, huge hit. I can do that for you.
When, next week?
Yeah, I think so. Just keep listening. And sometimes it takes a while, but I get them eventually.
Okay.
All right. It won't be Monday because we have trivia on Monday, and I don't think there are going to be any Johnny and Joe questions.
Okay. Yeah, I've been a songster since about 7 years old. My sister and I used to dance.
Ah.
I don't know where we learned to dance, but we was music folks way back, and she started singing in church, and she made a couple of albums.
Good.
She passed away not too long ago, but.
We used to
fight as we was coming up. We never drew blood or anything like that. I could fight her, but I didn't let nobody else hit her, you know.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I will get you your Over the Mountain, Across the Sea. I promise.
Okay. Thank you.
And your Little Green Apples. I haven't forgotten. All right, thanks a lot.
All right,
Frank. All right, so yes, we'll absolutely do that. We've pretty much run out of time, and I had a bunch of other bumpers to play too, including related to this date in history kind of stuff. And but Johnny and Joe, always fun. Like I said, Kingdom of Love, that was later, but it was a great record, so maybe we'll play that too. In the meantime, meant to add, when we were talking about people moving from one thing to another, loyalty for whatever, when it comes to the masses, and particularly with regard to radio, one factor is that teens will react very quickly. It's very quick to get them when you're doing the right things. It's also very quick to lose them. But when you're dealing with older adults, those habit patterns, man, well, of course, they had to drop 1160 when the format went away. And once they went somewhere else, it's hard to get them back. That's always always been the case. All right, so 888, what am I giving the phone number out? You can't call it. Now, tomorrow night, don't call it, because tomorrow night is a replay of Monday Night Trivia, and there is a straggler that we'll be attacking when we're live again next Monday night. So if you don't know what it is, you might want to listen tomorrow night to hear the replay to figure that out. Of course, you can always listen to the streams. The show replays on the stream continually until the next live show. And if that's not good enough, you can download them. So you can download the shows anytime you want. Just go to Rollye.net, Rollye.net, and you will be able to click on streaming or on downloads and get whatever you want. So that, I thought that I would completely run out of time, but I'm left with almost 20 whole seconds here to tell you that I really appreciate the calls. It makes all the difference in the world. So thank you for that. And I thank John for screening the calls. That's a big help too. But we wouldn't be on the air at all if it weren't for Adam back at Master Control. So he'd been gone for a few days, but back now. So we appreciate that. And we'll talk to him again next week, and we'll talk to you as well. So until then, I'll say that's a wrap. I'm Rollye James. It's WGN Radio.